I haven't been printing them because we're trying to do it save paper and.
It's the same. It's the same as it always is.
It's the same.
All right. So we'll start with our reorganization meeting, the call to order, the election of officers, president and vice president. Do we have any nominations for president?
I nominate Jennifer Gerlach.
I'll second.
I just wanted to read one thing because we have our new bylaws. So I just wanted to be clear that we had said in Article 4.4, board officers shall be elected by the board at the board's annual meeting, January is our annual meeting, upon vacancy, and shall include a president and a vice president. No one board member can serve in the same officer role for more than 3 consecutive 1-year terms.
Okay,
now,
good.
We can decide, because you've probably been president for 200 years, but we can decide if we wanted to start that. You know, because these were new as of June,
right.
So we could start, if you guys wanted to choose to start that 3 consecutive 1-year terms now or retroactively count all of her. Okay. And just for the record, the president shall preside at all meetings of the full board and enforce the parliamentary rules. We have Robert's Rules of Orders that's always brought up. Have the authority to vote on all matters except as otherwise prohibited by law. Call special meetings of the board whenever there is enough business to come before the board upon written request of at least 3 members of the board or upon written request of the health officer or director. Advise the health officer or director or their designee on agenda preparation for the meetings. Sign all papers and documents as required by law or as authorized by action of the board. Exercise such powers as may be delegated by the board. And the president, in consultation with the vice president, will designate a board member to preside over meetings of the full board and enforce the parliamentary rules in the absence of the president and vice president. I'll save the vice president one for when we get to that vote. So if you want to just reinforcing the president's job.
Any other nominations? So we'll take a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Congratulations.
All right. On to Vice President. Any nominations?
Julia.
I'll second that.
Let me just read for the purposes. The vice president shall, in the absence of the president, serve in the capacity and assume the duties of the president, everything I just read, taking actions appropriate to fulfill said responsibilities.
Okay. Any other nominations? We'll take a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Congratulations, Julie.
Thank you.
Congratulations, new president and vice president.
So appointments, Secretary Karen, thank you for doing a wonderful job all these years.
There's no limit on her terms, is there?
Nope. Okay. She's stuck forever.
And we need approval of the meeting schedule that was sent out earlier.
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
And do you want to read the attendance on that?
Yes, thank you. Attendance, just to reiterate, board members are expected to provide notice to the board through the health officer, director, or their designee if they are unable to attend board meetings in writing at least 24 hours in advance of the meeting to be excused. Reasonable efforts will be made to schedule meetings during times that work for all board members. Hold on, let me find. The board members who miss 4 meetings in a row or at least half of the meetings in a year may be referred to the county board with a recommendation that the board member be removed from office. And a board member can send a designated meetings in the member's place if designation in writing at least 48 hours before the meeting occurs. The designee, however, cannot vote on behalf of the board member.
And we're going to continue with October and January in person, the rest are virtual.
Yes, ma'am.
So, minutes from the last three meetings, October 12th, November 9th, and December 14th. We have to approve them all separately, right? Okay. Any questions or concerns on October 12th? We have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
On to November 9th. Any questions? Complications?
Move to approve.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
December 14th. Any questions or modifications? Do a motion? I wasn't here, so I can't move it. Somebody else is.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any public comments? So, president's comments.
Diane, can you use your microphone?
Oh, sure.
Just get it down route.
You just push.
Is that better?
Yep.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay. My only comments, I think Aurora put out some really interesting statistics to us this week that for the Advocate Aurora system, hospitalized patients with COVID, 94% are not vaccinated. Of ICU patients, it's like 95% are not vaccinated. Of ventilated patients, 98% are not vaccinated. So the vaccines are working. We just got to get them in people. The numbers for kids is skyrocketing. Bad enough that Indian Trail closed for a week. So, keep plugging along. Yes?
I was just going to add, our epidemiologist has been crunching numbers for the last 4 weeks for both Aurora and Freight Excel separately and then combined, so we have better hospital totals. And for Aurora, it was at 72% unvaccinated for just the Aurora Kenosha. We were ranging between 85 and 95% unvaccinated between our two hospitals. That has gone down a little bit, largely because Omicron is so transmissible that that was bound to happen. But it is still at hovering. I mean, it changes by the day for when people get discharged. But it's hovering between 70 and 85% on any given day.
Yeah, my statistics were for
the whole Aurora. Yeah, I just wanted to make that distinction because Aurora does count everybody in all the systems in Illinois and Wisconsin.
Yeah. And Illinois.
Many more.
Okay, on to health officers'
report. Great, I'll start with COVID. Please let me know, interrupt me if you have questions. First of all, our hospitals between our two systems were between 81 and 85 patients per day now. That's the highest we've ever been. Last December at its peak was 72 patients between the two systems. So yes, hospitals are strained. It's largely a staffing issue. Third shift nurses, even respiratory therapists. So that is still continuing, and the staffing issues still continue there. Deaths, we did hit over the Christmas holiday and the New Year's holiday, 12 each of those two weekends. We were averaging about 5 to 7 a day there for a little bit. We're back down to maybe 3 or 4 a day, still way too high. But for all of the fall, we were maybe 1 to 2 a day. So our deaths are still way too high. The medical examiner's office is inundated and buried with what's going on. For the month of December, the medical examiner reported 225 deaths that they had to investigate. Now that's all deaths. 80 of those were COVID. So that was just, for example, December's numbers there. So all systems are still completely overwhelmed. As far as cases, our numbers are extremely high. Of course, we don't know all of the numbers because of the home tests, which is good that people have that as a resource, but those are not reportable. So even when we state, like on our website, what our cases are, it is always going to be much higher because we don't know how many home tests are out there. we could extrapolate with some of our schools. We have many schools actually going virtual right now, not just Indian Trail. We have many, many that are choosing to go virtual. Yeah. Largely because of staffing. They don't have substitute teacher staffing issues to keep up with the numbers of kids. We still have many, many under age 18 cases and staffing issues there. We were able to extrapolate when we were trying to put some semblance to the number of home tests. For example, in October, there were schools that they would call us and say, we think we should close. We have this many number. And we would look at our logs and we'd say, well, it looks our logs are showing you only have 13 positive cases. And then they would say, no, we have 26. So because they're getting the parents who are reporting their home tests to them. So we were sort of tabulating, now this was October, November, that we were maybe getting 50% was what it was showing from what the school had. So I don't want to extrapolate that and say that what's reported on our county website is only 50%, but that's the best we could come up with when we were trying to gather some sense of how many people take home tests. People are also saying that the home tests are flying off the shelves at the pharmacies. However, we're being told by pharmacies they get resupplied daily. So if you go today, the shelves are empty, they could be filled tomorrow. So our message is for people just to keep checking back. The turnover changes daily at the pharmacies. As far as the Biden plan, I do not have any new information on that. It's appearing that it will be a two-pronged approach, but don't quote me on this, is that any average person can go to the website that the president sets up to request a test, no insurance, no cost, and it'll get sent to you. Another pronged approach would be that maybe they send a big bulk to the state health department, they distribute that to local health departments, and we somehow distribute that. No other word on that. I don't know how that's going to work. And we hear that that's coming in the next couple of weeks. Now, our federally qualified health center, KCHC, has already received a small amount of home tests. So they're now working out their algorithm for how they're going to distribute that to those most in need. We're also seeing that some of our schools that have higher proportions of students of color or higher proportions of students of need that don't have as high of COVID numbers as some of our other schools. So that is really showing us that we need to investigate that more. Does that mean do they not have access to tests? Are they not testing enough? Yeah. And therefore we don't know the full COVID burden on all of our schools. So that really points to the equity issue that we need to investigate a lot deeper. That was something that just came, the data just came on that this last week that we said, what's happening with these schools that their numbers appear really low, but we don't think they're that low. So that's something we have to look into. As far as other testing sites, we're getting lots of complaints that there's nowhere to get tested in the county. I have to push back on that a little bit. There are many places to get tested. I think people calling our call center are telling us how Walgreens and CVS are 3 weeks out for appointments. And our recommendation is look at our COVID website. We have every testing site listed. There's many other places. For example, our National Guard out of Twin Lakes, and I know that's way out of Twin Lakes, has plenty of room for walk-up. We've also now listed the 24/7 sites that are in Milwaukee. I know that's a further drive. We've listed sites in Racine and Walworth for the people closer to the border there that they can go to those other counties. So there are many, many places to get tested. Yes, the curative site at the KUSD administration building was overwhelmed, so they moved to appointment only. So the systems are overwhelmed. We still are seeing test results come back within 48 hours, so it's not taking large amounts of time. Some labs are taking closer to 3 or 4 days, but all in all, the labs are sort of keeping up. So there are still many testing options.
Jen, I'm going to push back on that.
Yeah.
I'm going to push back on that because there aren't options in the city of Kenosha. There may be out in the county and in Milwaukee and places like that, but in the city of Kenosha, it is tough to get a test.
If you don't have a car, you can't get a test.
I mean, and I'm talking about people with a car. There is just, again, you can't. The places that are listed on the website are pushed out so far so that people go to use the sites that aren't blessed by the health department, and even those are hard to get a test. By 1 o'clock in the afternoon, they're out of tests typically. So I'm going to push back and say that.
And that is a recent development. And I have, because the one on 75th, yeah, they've been running out because of, they're trying to work within their system. That CLIA has put some certain requirements on them. But there are certainly we're working with more sites. We have no short of like 6 Illinois labs we're working with right now. The issue is all these companies come up from Illinois. They do charge insurance. They don't charge for the test, but they have to get a Wisconsin CLIA waiver. They have to go through the Wisconsin lab reporting system through the state lab of hygiene and be able to upload into our Wisconsin electronic disease surveillance system. It's not a massive process, but they do have to go through several steps. So I have 6 testing companies that since mid-December have been going through this process. And they're all at different phases, and it's all based upon how fast they want to fill out the paperwork and do it. So it's not a slowdown per se on the Wisconsin side. Hoping to get some of those. I know that some of them have already leased buildings, built the city building inspectors, fire marshal have already approved the site. Now they just have to get through the CLIA waiver and the state lab of hygiene. So more is coming. Is it fast enough for the need right now? No, unfortunately, even though we've been working with them since December. So, but those with transportation have more options if they'll drive a little farther. Yeah. And out west of the eye, there aren't many options. It's the National Guard. That's the only option out there, really. So we've been working on trying to get some more out there as well, too. Testing. So vaccination obviously has really slowed down, except our clinics are still hopping, especially with the fact that 12 and older can now get a booster after 5 months. So obviously the kid cases are low. We're still only at 15% of our 12 to 15-year-olds that are vaccinated in Kenosha County. So we need to get more children vaccinated. Average age of hospitalizations is age 58.6. So, and that's largely because of unvaccinated. Our over 65 population has a much higher vaccination rate. However, we're getting people who are unvaccinated over 65. We've had some of our disease investigators who have been on a call and said, I'm going to have you hang up and call 911 next because they're having such trouble breathing. So we're having to instruct people to go seek medical attention because they're having such a hard time. And this largely what we're finding with those cases is that it's over 70 and unvaccinated that are really having the hardest hit outcomes from that. We have formed a new COVID team within the health department. And part of this is in response to a new state guidance that is going to be coming in the next week or two. COVID is right now a Category 1 disease, which means we, by state statute, have to disease investigate every single case. Obviously, our resources have been overwhelmed since September, and we slowly have gone from then reaching, we reached before September 100% of all positive cases, down to over the holidays, we were lucky if we reached 20% of positive cases simply because of so many cases and so overrode our system. Obviously, we've had the disease investigation position open year-round. We don't get many applicants. So the 40 or so temporary staff that we had last summer that lasted all through the vaccination efforts, and then they went off and got other jobs when our shop code closed, we never got that bulk of people back. So our resources are tapped and we're hurting. We are now able to have some flexibility from the state to be able to realign our pandemic response to the need of our counties. The downside is that creates a bit of a patchwork quilt. Every county is going to be choosing something different, but the positive is, as opposed to having all of our health staff sitting on phones all day long, getting hung up on, not reaching people, getting yelled at, we can now align those resources to, for example, the over 70 who are unvaccinated. We can really focus on that population. Kenosha County has a disproportionately higher Hispanic population that's hospitalized and dying. So we want to be able to focus on that population, get into the neighborhoods, get into the communities, do more porch missions like mobile street missions we did, attend churches, attend the grocery stores, do much more of that we haven't been able to do recently because our resources were so tied to disease investigation and contact tracing. So this is not, I want to be clear, this is not public health throwing up our hands or saying, no, we're not following up. This is the state now, appropriately, I would argue, aligning resources better to slow down hospitalizations and deaths and to target those who are disproportionately affected by hospitalization and deaths. So I'm excited. This gets us back to community health, population health, what we're good at. And while it will be a change for the community, and I know the community may say, well, you know, how come I'm not getting a call from public health? We are putting additional resources to our call center. So it will be a little bit of a shift that you'll see a message go out that says, we may not call you, but here's the number you call us. So If somebody wants to know what their isolation dates are, they have questions about their symptoms. And so there will be some huge messaging around that. It will be a change, and so I ask of all of you to be those good public health advocates when I'm sure there's a part of the population that will think public health isn't doing their job, or see, I told you COVID wasn't a big deal, or it's just allowing us to realign our resources to help those most affected. Any questions on that before I go on?
Is that, are you done with the COVID stuff? Or? I just have a question about school stuff, school system and COVID.
Oh, I do have one more thing, but go ahead.
Oh, I'm just curious, has KUSD been consulting with you regarding things? I ask this because
absolutely.
I'm looking at, there's probably, 15 schools that are over the 3% threshold, at least, as of, I think, last night. And I got an email today from KUSD saying that they're, regardless of whether the schools are closed and are virtual, that they're allowing extracurricular activities and things like that. And I'm just wondering if they've consulted with the health department about the sanity of that whole process.
So, first of all, all of the 11 school districts in Kenosha County and the parochial and private schools we meet with on a regular basis. They know our stance. Ultimately, it's up to school boards. So we do say, on the risk continuum, what's safer, what's not safe. Last year we went through tennis versus football. We went to that level of detail with them. Clearly their boards are choosing what they want to do. The 3%, I will just say, I don't know that any school district is using that as the one and only data point. What's largely causing the schools to close is lack of staff. And we're seeing that tends to typically happen when they have 3% missing. So, that was a metric we came up with the state public health system, came up with in August of 2020. The schools are using it as a point to look at, but that's not we're 3%, we're closing. That's how they're looking at it as a data point.
Okay.
They are consulting with us and calling us.
Recommendations that are not in accordance with how the district has decided to proceed. Is that correct?
There's many, because there are school districts that only mask recommend, and obviously they all know that I am a mask required kind of person for schools, and that our health department and public health in general require masks. The school boards are choosing which guidance they want to follow, and that is their right.
It's just like with the schools, if in the high school, they send out the notices that your kids in the class is exposed, but nobody has quarantine.
Right.
And if they did make you quarantine, they wouldn't be in school for months, because we're getting 3 or 4 calls a week.
Right. I'm all aware, yes.
Each school district has their own, they're choosing their own, yeah.
I have a question about your employees in the health department. Can you give us a little rundown on how they're doing?
Yes.
As far as working and not working?
So for the first time last week, we had something like 7 people out with COVID. So when the health department staff get COVID, then it's everywhere. Because we're the most safe people. And we knew that was kind of coming. So for the first time, we were kind of hit last week with Lori was considering, can we even keep the clinics open? Because our staff, especially our clinic-facing staff who are, public-facing, are at most risk. So we wear N95 masks in the clinic, and, they're super careful and safe, but Omicron is very transmissible, so we've been hit.
You said N95 masks?
For our front-facing, public-facing staff, correct.
Are they available to you?
We're a health system, so we purchase them, yeah.
There are not that many out there, I guess.
Well, and so that was one of my other updates, as you may have seen the city of Milwaukee on the news that is tossing packs of masks into car windows. And so they, it's Milwaukee. They got their masks first. We have placed a very large order just on Friday. That was the first available date that the state allowed us to order masks. So we are expecting to get a very large order of masks, KN95 masks. N95 is not recommended for the general population. And just to clear up some confusion, I heard on school board meetings, N95 masks are the ones that are respiratory fit tested. KN95 masks are not. There is no way to fit test on a KN95 mask. So I just had to clear up that point of confusion that was out there. When we get those masks, we're already working with the library system. So we will have them to be able to distribute at all the libraries, Shalom Center, other food pantries in the senior, like Westosha Senior Center and the Kenosha Senior Center. My mind just went blank. So we have a couple other places that we will be able to distribute those. I'm not sure whether we'll have enough to be able to do that, stand on the corner and toss them into car windows like you're seeing on the news, but we're going to make sure that they get to people in need. And I think they're coming in packs of 12. So we don't have them yet. We will get them soon, and I'll let you know as we distribute those.
Can I ask a question going back on something?
Yeah.
We're talking about the city and the testing, the concern with testing availability. And you mentioned the National Guard is doing testing. It's in Twin Lakes. Is there a reason why they're in Twin Lakes? And could they spend some time in the city, you know, divide it up or visit the city more often? Or is there a reason they're not doing that? I'm just curious.
There are two reasons. One was that we cannot find a location in the city. The National Guard's requirements are to be, COVID tests have to be in a temperature control in order to pass CLIA certification. So you can't just stand outside in the cold. We had a heck of a time finding a place within the city limits that met that requirement, temperature control. Whereas in the summertime, we could just plop up a tent in the parking lot and they could be there. But knowing in the winter, we've called warehouses, we've called car washes, we've looked at empty buildings. Kenosha Community Health Center had the exact same problem, finding an appropriate place. They finally landed on the Chase Bank downtown for a while. That's been our biggest hurdle in the city, is finding an appropriate wintertime location. The Salem Fire Department, obviously, they're allowing them to be inside. They were allowing a bay to be open so that people could drive through the bay. The other reason is because there weren't a lot of testing options west of the I. We needed to fill that need. So that is why, of those two reasons, they're out there.
Yeah, I just am surprised they couldn't, you know, spend some time in the city. I think, yeah, there's a need out west.
If you have a location, I am all ears. So that was bought. The reason why we had to get out of there in May is because then somebody bought it.
Or what about using one of the temperature-controlled type trailers that all these pop-up places are using?
That's what Freighter's using.
They use a different type of test. What the National Guard uses has a different temperature control.
But, I mean, isn't there...
temperature
camper. I'm thinking a camper or something of that sort. You can have it at different temperatures.
Right.
Like, and National Guard doesn't come with that. So to buy a camper or...
Okay.
Yeah. But could we get somebody to donate a camper
can't
for...
Get something like that donated, you know, for use in the...
If you have resources, donate. Our resources are strapped.
Okay.
If you have resources to know where to find that, we are all ears.
I'm even just thinking, like, contacting one of the local RV places, you know, that sells them.
And your mountain,
be willing
whatever.
To, you know, throw your little place up there and have it be an advertisement or whatever to utilize it or something of that sort.
Who's using the old bus from the KCHC?
So that, the other thing is you don't want COVID-positive people coming into a bus or an indoor space, right? So that particular bus is like a two-room. You walk in and there's two clinic bedrooms. That was more or less set out at like Gateway as an advertisement. You don't want to bring the COVID positive people onto the bus.
But could we have that for the staff, for the clinical staff? You've got two rooms, temperature controlled. Meanwhile, they're going in and out.
Parking lot is an issue.
Okay, so we need to access.
It's location, location, location. And believe me, we have all tried many, many, many places.
Kmart? We talked to Kmart?
Back before Shopko. Yeah.
We can't use that parking lot. All right, and that's fish.
So, that is, let me just see. Oh, we have been doing homebound weekly for the past, I don't know, year. I think we're down to one day a week now. We do about 40 homebound in one day. We send a team out. Good Value Pharmacy has also just gotten into that game where they're going up for people who have transportation issues or homebound. So again, all you have to do is call the call center. We'll do a homebound visit, or call Good Value Pharmacy. They'll do a homebound visit. So to get people vaccinated, not for testing, for vaccination. So we're excited that Good Value joined in that game. They're going to be doing one day a week in Kenosha and one day a week in Racine because they straddle the two counties with their pharmacy. So that is one thing that is going on. We're beefing up our call center, and also Lori has been working with kids in crisis on placement of people experiencing homelessness who are COVID positive. So for the whole first year of the pandemic, the state had a funding pot to be able to put people up in hotels and would reimburse us for that. That funding went away in June. We didn't really have any cases until December. Of course, it's winter time. And we had a couple over the holidays that we simply could not find a placement for. Hotels being full, hotels not wanting to work with this population. So we're doing a lot of outreach now to try to get more hotels. We literally only have one that's agreed to putting up people who are COVID positive. And so we're working on additional hotels right now, and we're also working on a policy. The hospitals discharge people at different dates and times, and we're trying to make sure that they don't just discharge somebody to a parking lot, that we get them placed, especially if they need to still be under isolation. So we're working quickly to try to remedy that situation so we don't have anybody just out.
Does adult crisis assist you?
Yeah, they're part of the whole solution. They're now the ones paying for the hotel voucher now that the state's program is not there, and they're procuring the food for them. All right, so that I think is my COVID update. A question I wanted to pose to all of you though is, given the new strategy, the fact that we're able to have more flexibility and focus on what we need to focus on for this pandemic, I would love all of your input of where you think our focus, I mean, I loosely mentioned, you know, unvaccinated over 70, our Hispanic population, you know, but we are open, and as we're realigning staff who are doing 100% disease investigation to these mobile missions and whatnot, I would love all of your input as to what you think our public health focus should be on now, given this flexibility.
I think public service announcements and just debunking all of this. I think people are still in that place where they feel that their DNA is changing and that, you know, by getting this vaccine, they're going to get the disease. I mean, I'm still hearing some of this out there.
We hear so much, yeah.
I just like people understanding the importance of it. I think, you know, again, due to the fact that it's been politicized, I think there, you know, people may have just dug in their heels regardless of what kind of research and information you can give them. But then those are people that are making that choice, like, from, you know, from that place. But the people, I think there's just still so many people who just don't understand it and don't understand the risk versus benefit. Mm-hmm.
With that, I think I would work on the how to really reach more of the minority populations. Because I'm still getting them in my office with, that's not really a vaccine, or that's not safe. And you can go through everything, and there's still, and you, the numbers that you keep putting out are the ones that are not vaccinated or more often minority populations.
And I'm really trying to change the narrative too, because I continuously hear well-educated people say, well, the vaccine's been out there, everybody's had a chance to get it by now. And that is absolutely not the case. When we've been out at barbershops or churches or doing the street, you know, porch by porch mobile missions, the overwhelming response is, you know, whether they had transportation issues or they're working so many jobs or they, you know, they couldn't come when the clinics were open, that they were overwhelmingly appreciative of us being right there on their porch, making it convenient. And quite honestly, they just had a couple of questions, and they wanted somebody to answer it. They just wanted somebody to answer their questions. And once we answered their questions, they were totally receptive, and we got many, many people vaccinated.
Yeah. When you have these conversations, I hear a certain type of minority person in my mind. And that's one of the things I've always struggled with is, you know, can you specify which type of minority person you're trying to access? Because those barriers, they do sound like someone who may not have accessible means to more scholarly research. You know, so I'm hearing a particular minority person. Who is that person that you're trying to reach?
I don't know that I would say it's just one person. I would say between all of our missions, you know, when we're, whether we're at St. Mark's or Second Baptist, you know, it's like, it's definitely just us being present and not just one time, you know, coming back and revisiting after they've had time to hear the answers and think about it or talk to their family or whatever. You know what I mean? So I think as far as the data, we're obviously targeting certain groups that we've seen higher rates of death in. But if you're asking, like, who are we targeting? it's anybody who hasn't had a chance to get a vaccine, really.
You know, the other thing I think that I hear a lot of is, well, what difference does it make if I get the vaccine? Because people who have had the vaccine and have had their boosters are still getting the disease. And, you know, I think we understand as a group that, you know, the severity is so much different and, you know, things like that. But I think there's a lot of people that think, well, whether I'm vaccinated or not vaccinated, I'm going to have the same effect, you know, if I get the disease. So I think that's another educational point too, mm-hmm. to push.
I think a couple things. One, the CDC does not have a good reputation right now because of kind of some of the waffling and some of the ways that they have approached. I mean, we need a Neil deGrasse Tyson, you know, did for physics. We need somebody to stand up there and give some marketing and some very clear explanations of what is going on. But, you know, I can speak to the Columbus Park neighborhood and the Frank Elementary School area. And when I was trying to educate and get people on board and get buy-in for things, we had monthly meetings at the school. We just, I mean, like Gordy and you know, I showed up at the school, we showed up at the school, people showed up, people asked questions. And it was only through like repeated community meetings where you just sat there and you waited to see who showed up and what were the issues and, okay, let's talk about this, we'll talk about that. And I think that's kind of what we need. We need for people who are leaders, I mean, Roger came to some of my meetings, but, you know, we need people to show up and as you're allocating resources, you know, you may have two people, you may have 15 people, but we also need, we need to get the people who are our neighborhood watch captains in various neighborhoods. Those people have the ear of people.
And that's
in the area.
Who we're using for through the health equity task force.
And so
are those,
you know,
blog by blog missions, yeah.
Yeah, and so kind of like going through that way and just being there to ask the questions. You mentioned the barbershops and the churches. Are we doing things through the school, or is the school not interested in us?
We have done vaccination efforts through the schools. I can tell you some of them got beat up when they advertised that we were going to be there. But we did get pretty good turnout for vaccine to vaccinate their staff who showed up because we were there. And again, it was a matter of, that's what we keep hearing. So again, not just minority populations. When we show up in somebody else's shop, it's a convenience factor. Being there to make it convenient for them, which we haven't had the resources to devote to that since September, that convenience factor is what really helps motivate people.
Right, and I want to come back to my question earlier is, well, when you're talking about marketing, so what I'm hearing is, where are we going to market that, hey, we want to make this convenient for you, get this vaccine? I think of an ideal client or an ideal person. Who is this person? Where are they at? Based on the numbers, where might this person frequent? Is it's not just at a church or, you know, a barbershop. So do we understand the person and where they go? Where are they at? So that's what I meant in terms of, well, who is this person we're marketing to or trying to get the vaccine to? Where are they? Where are they spending time that we may not have tapped into?
And so what our health equity task force did is we utilized our epidemiologist and we GIS mapped the neighborhoods that have the highest risk and the lowest vaccination rate. So that's where we based our mobile street missions to go to those neighborhoods. And so we have a list from, you know, lowest to highest. And how many, Lori, did we do over the... Anyway, yeah. There's still more, much more to be done. But we were able to sort of start at, you know, and in an hour, 2 hours that we were out there, you're able to basically hit, it was like 40 houses, you know, by the time you walk these two streets or whatever. So it was slow going. It takes huge human resources, but now I'm finally able to give more human resources to that. So, but I hear your point to the target person that we're trying to reach or whatever. We were more or less looking at where are our lowest vaccination rates in the county.
Right. So it takes a merge of what you're talking about as schools, churches, whatever, but also
with
this person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I hear you. Yeah.
When it comes to minority Hispanic community, I you know, sometimes I feel like I'm tired because I keep telling them, you need to get vaccinated. And including two members of my family, my son and my daughter-in-law, who live next to us. Guys, you gotta go get vaccinated. They just don't want it. And then my daughter-in-law transferred from one place to another because she was obligated to vaccinate and she didn't do it. So she went to a different place. But she went to Pleasant Prairie office and she got the COVID. And she still don't vaccinate. And so like sometimes we try. I mean, in my office, I have a sign in Spanish. If you need a test, let me know. I can get it for you. If you need the vaccine, I can get it for you in Spanish. Mm-hmm. No one has asked me if I can get one. Instead, the ones that I came across, I says, did you vaccinate yourself? No, I don't need to do that. And so, still last night, there was this young guy. He says, I don't need to get vaccinated. I got the COVID and I'm fine. And I'm like, you just can't win sometimes.
And I think sometimes the message comes differently from different people. You know, so for example, I'm speculating, maybe your children are tired of hearing you preach about it or whatever, right? So sometimes if they hear a different story from someone else, we have found great success when the business owner or the pastor or the, when they're promoting it.
When the respected person.
Right, yeah. When the respected person in whatever that community is, whether it's the church or whatever, you know, speaks, that's when we get many, many more people. So that's where kind of like to the neighborhood advocate or, you know, whoever the person is, when we can identify those people, we get much further.
I mean, recently we just lost a couple. They were very close to Father Carlos. Mm-hmm. And I know you guys have been working with Father Carlos very closely and he's really helping everybody. Well, these two members of St. Mark's, Luis Martinez, he was one of my clients, and his wife, I believe, died like early in the morning, and then he died like in the afternoon, COVID. Mm-hmm. And he refuses to get vaccinated. Mm-hmm. I told him a couple of times, Luis, you're an older person, you have higher risk. No, I don't need to do that, just only, I mean, you just gotta convince them. It's hard. But we'll keep trying.
Another target population our medical examiner has reported is that many, many of the deaths are people with BMI over 30. Also, comorbidities. We know diabetes, other things are very prevalent. And the health departments, countrywide, not just us, in large part over recent years have gotten away from chronic diseases. And so I think what this is also really showing us is that, because communicable diseases are statutory that we have to do, but we don't pay attention a lot to chronic diseases. Yeah, we have diabetes programs, we have an asthma program, it's not like we've totally abandoned that, but we don't get funding for that anymore, and our priorities have to be where the funding is, unfortunately, sometimes. So I think this is really showing us those comorbidities that we need to do more. We're already working on diabetes education and program. How we can, maybe we have to look back at physical activity and nutrition programs, right? Those kind of went by the wayside in public health departments in like the 70s and 80s, you know? So, because then we heavily relied on physicians to really speak to nutrition and body mass and all of that. And so I think it's not just the health department, it's a whole system issue that we all need to look at together that COVID really has shown a spotlight on.
It's a BMI issue, maybe we need to hit fast food restaurants.
I was just going to say,
put somebody in there.
Well, also BMI, who is that norm guy? Like, I mean, even the BMI is
a
determination of, I mean, are we talking about obesity or?
She said BMI of 30.
Okay. So yeah, so obesity is BMI 30 to 40, and then extremely obese is over 40. So there is some very preliminary research out there that COVID stores in body fat. So, you know, that's very early research. I wouldn't want to quote that. But there could be something to that because the reports we're getting from the medical examiner show a lot of that.
What about restaurants? You've got essential workers who are surrounded by people without masks. Even if the restaurant, if the employees themselves wear masks, and I know from family discussion that there have been servers in my family and bartenders in my family who have been spit on, who have been screamed at, who have been told, if you don't, pull your mask down, let me see you smile, and then you're going to get a better tip. I mean, there's that kind of attitude. Oh, it's That, yeah, I know, right?
That's creepy.
But that's part of being a service worker, you know? And you know, what about going to the restaurants and the, you know, and see whether, A, we can do vaccinations, and B, improve some testing. I can say that I personally have spent a lot of money on tests that have been given to this family member who is then testing fellow employees.
I think that's a great idea. We did take, in the early days, we would stop by different restaurants downtown when we had, you know, plenty of vaccine, and we have plenty right now. I'm not saying we're in any sort of shortage, but yeah, I think that's a good idea. Now that I finally have resources to put to that. We always have all these great ideas.
Right.
We just never had any resources to do that.
Right. Yeah.
So, one other thing is that we did do, since 9/11, every health department in the country has received an emergency preparedness and response grant. Many of you have met Stacey Wyans, who she's our coordinator for that. And every year we were required to do an exercise to prepare for an emergency. And through an exercise, you have to develop an after-action report. It's part of the Homeland Security Exercise and Evaluation Program. There's a very scripted way you have to do it. We just did our after-action report for the 2021 year. It's very close to being finalized. I will, Karen, will send that out to all of you guys as soon as we finalize that. It's a little dense if you're having trouble falling asleep at night, but I just wanted to make sure. It's more of a quality improvement process on the inside of the health department. How could we have done things better? How can we improve moving forward in this response? It was obviously a very fixed point in time, 2021, so a large portion of that was mass vaccination efforts, which right now we're not in mass vaccination efforts. So for the next pandemic, we'll be ready with some better. but anyway, I just wanted you all to be aware of that, we do follow a very strict Homeland Security process. We have an official after-action report. We'll probably put that on our website, too. It's public knowledge, and we'll share that. And, yes, that is all that I have for COVID. My only non-COVID thing outside of physicians are still not lead testing. I wish more people would do venous draws and lead tests.
I ordered one today.
Thank you.
I didn't
mind. It is a massive problem, and 3 years from now, we're going to be reeling from the effects of not lead testing. And so that's my one big thing there. We do have two Board of Health vacancies. The County Exec has sent one letter out to a new potential member. They will likely be on they have to go to County Board this month, be referred back to Human Service February 1st. So by February 17th, they will go back to the County Board. We have another vacancy. We've been interviewing some people. I'm finding this time of day is hard for people, noon meetings, for people to attend to, so maybe that's something we want to revisit again in the future. I know we've already revisited it in the past. So having a little bit more difficulty finding somebody to fill that other vacancy for the Board of Health, so more to come on that.
Yeah. I have one of my neighbors, he's from the, official name, but they are from the gay community.
Mm-hmm.
He's one of the activists. Can I invite him to see if he can like to apply for?
So the first step is to send the name through the County Exec. So the County Exec appoints all open members. He, and this may change in April with the election, he will say, Jen, do you want to call them and find out about their health background or their interest or whatever? So I do sort of a, like I did with you, a mini interview, you know, yes. Hey, what do you think? Want to do this, da da da. So then he can put that forward to me to talk to them.
Yep, yep. What's the status on us becoming vaccine card mandated everywhere?
I doubt that will ever happen. You know, only 50% of us are vaccinated.
Well, it hasn't stopped those states.
I know, right?
Yeah. I know we're currently doing that with, I think, Cook County. I know because we are on my daughter's synchro team is in Cook County, so that is an issue. I mean, yeah. She competes this weekend in Illinois, and I have to show a vaccine card to be a spectator.
Yep. It's discriminatory, so we're talking about two different things. We want people to get vaccinated, but we're not going to hold them to the highest standard of if you want to go in public, you got to show this card. You know, yes, it takes a big run, you know, so it's so political, discriminatory, all of it, all in one. There is no right way to do this thing, but, you know, tell them they made folks start wearing masks. They almost hurt them. Oh, I mean, I use that analogy.
Yeah. That would get started as, you know, a mask. but I mean, we're not even there yet, you know?
Well, we tried that.
No, I know, I'm just saying that, like, that wasn't successful here the way it is down there.
I think of just like the psychology of people, of like, you know, do you hold them to the high standards? Do they perform or they don't? Would that increase the numbers of vaccinations? Is it ever an ending cycle?
It's the, you know, because the reason why there's no polio today, you know what I mean? Like, it, the way vaccine was so accepted, you know, our children receive many, many vaccines.
Yes.
And I think COVID eventually will go that way. I think because of how politicized this has gotten, for whatever reason, although in 1918, it was just as politicized. In San Francisco, two people got shot for not wearing a mask in a public park. So, I mean, it was like, they had a little more martial law back in 1918, I guess. But, like, it was, I worry when, because I have no doubt COVID eventually will go the way of the childhood, you know, vaccine mandates like every other vaccine, and I worry what that's going to do to public health at that time.
No, more so just a public mandate. You need to show a vaccine card to frequent our place.
Mm-hmm. I like the restaurants that are doing it. I like that people are looking at that. But, yeah, it's a whole bunch of ethical issues wrapped into one.
All right. So we've got about 5 minutes left. Corporate Council report.
I'm meeting with Mark this afternoon on that food ordinance. So it's still being worked on. I think that's really all I have.
And just as a reminder for any of you who maybe didn't catch it last month, just as when we were looking at the Board of Health bylaws and they were written by a typewriter and we didn't have it electronically, same with these ordinances. As I started digging through, I had a binder of these old historical files and I went, ooh, did we not have that electronic or written? The food ordinance hadn't been updated since 1992, so I said, can we look at this, make sure we're compliant?
And what's that in regards to?
It's about restaurant food establishments, restaurants inspections for that, but it also is broader. Chapter 16 talks about tattooing and other things that are public health issues.
Methamphetamine houses, like, I mean, it's like the, it's what our environmental team does. So that's,
right, that's what is it
all? Yeah, all of that, yeah. Lots of updates coming to that. And the state's food code also just did get updated. So we're just trying to modernize, get up to the 2022 year.
Yeah, most of the changes are, you know, updating things. We're going to provide links hopefully within.
Excellent. I'm excited. That'll be good. Good stuff. And it's all in the spirit, too, of more transparency, right? Like, if it's sitting in a binder in the health officer's office, what good is that doing? So we're also looking at revamping our entire website. And I think the past of our website was very, like, let's list everything the health department does. But, you know, the public doesn't necessarily care and need to know everything. We need to put on the website what the public needs to know. Like, how to reach us, what services, you know, just quick and simple. If you got this, call here. If you got this, call here, or whatever. So we're revamping our entire website from a public lens that way, too.
I have one more question. Are you guys still offering, you know what my question is, the J&J booster?
We do still offer it. And, we still offer it if a person wants it.
Why? Knowing that
it is still an effective vaccine, just because they found that there was a higher rate of some conditions. So our nurse practitioner and our nurses are literally asking everyone to say what, you know, like if somebody has a certain health condition that they are at a higher risk for the side effects from that vaccine, then we will try to steer somebody elsewhere. But if somebody is bound to get that, they're gonna, we are bound to offer them what they want.
I mean, I think about the comorbidity of the higher risk of people with probably certain conditions, and are they more susceptible to what J&J, you know, so how does those two
apply? Yeah, I mean, we do, so we legally cannot sway somebody to one or the other, right?
No, like, no.
So while we may suggest Moderna or Pfizer and try to tell them some of the benefits, people come in with, we definitely have noticed that, like, people who come know exactly what they want.
Quick question about the fourth boosters for the CDC just approved, blah, blah, blah. When are we going to start? How are we going to start doing that with the immunocompromised?
So whenever Dr. Gerlach signs that for us, we can move on.
I signed a bunch and sent it back.
She had to sign like 500 orders because of all the changes lately. So
that's
So yeah, as soon as we get, so everything comes, when, just because CDC says it doesn't mean it's, we can automatically start. It has to go through the state, and then it has to go through, then we have to get Dr. Blah, 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 blah. So we're in constant communication. She gives verbal before we even have the written things from the state, so.
My kid was offered that 2 months ago as an elderly
person
who was immunosuppressed. They said, we're just going to give you a whole new set of vaccines. And I was like, I haven't heard of that.
Israel.
And then I read something about it on the CDC. I was like, oh, I guess they are doing that for immunocompromised older adults. But I know I thought that was like, it, I hadn't heard that anywhere else. So.
Was it offered in clinic?
Huh?
In clinic? Or?
Oh, like CVS.
Oh.
I don't, that sounds like it was before it was approved.
I'm thinking that it was. And I don't know that I think you shouldn't have gone on that fourth one for right now. So I don't think he's actually had the fourth one. I think that was like due a few weeks ago or whatever. And I was like, let's just hold off a little bit. But he was offered that.
Okay. Anything else? Otherwise we can adjourn. I gotta get back. We all have that extra time when we're virtual, right?
So yeah. We will be virtual until October, which means we won't be able to approve any minutes. So January through September minutes will all get approved at the October in-person meeting. That is.
Tomorrow we stay healthy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Motion?
Motion. Adjourn. Second. All right.
Karen, just make up names. Thank you, guys. Any other opinions or, you know, suggestions? I know you guys have come to us before. I finally can realign resources, so bring them our way.